Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR, I'm Jeffrey Riley. We'll briefly move off current events to talk about a bit of history. Early Rogue Valley settler John Beeson was a man unusual for his time. He spoke out in favor of fair treatment of Native Americans and spoke out forcefully at a time when his community did not appreciate what he had to say, back just before Oregon statehood in the 1850s. John Beeson is the focus of a talk at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University on Thursday at 5:30. The speaker wrote a book about John Beeson. Jan Wright is an archivist with Southern Oregon Historical Society and the author of John Beeson, Oregon Outcast, which we've discussed before in the program. Jan, welcome back.
Thank you.
So do you remember when you first discovered John Beeson? Was there a, whoa, who was this guy kind of moment?
Yes, there was. Many years ago, I used to travel up to Eugene, Oregon to look at the Wellborn Beeson diaries. They were at that time newly available to the public, and not having enough money to photocopy every page, I wrote his words down in my diary, and he started to mention his father, John Beeson, right from the very beginning. In fact, his father gave him the diary in which he wrote. And I was more fascinated with Wellborn in the beginning, but John kind of grew on me as the years went by.
Well, fascination is one thing, but what made you decide to write a book?
Well, I think it was because it was my contribution to all the things that were happening politically and emotionally and socially in this country. And I realized that John Beeson had a lot to say about just our treatment of Native Americans, but people in general. He was an avid abolitionist before he became an Indian advocate. And those issues are very important to me. I grew up in the South, and I witnessed firsthand some of the treatment that people received. And I had that same kind of, there's got to be justice in this world. There's got to be fairness.
Well, I suspect we're close to the same age, and I can imagine that you were seeing things that were curling your hair
yes.
at a time when the
yes.
civil rights legislation of
Absolutely.
The 60s was passed.
Right. I grew up in Montgomery, and George Wallace was the governor. So it was a really scary time, and my father was an activist in the civil rights movement as much as he could be. And so John Beeson appealed to me on that level.
It seems like you mentioned the works of Wellborn Beeson, his son, and his diary helping out a lot. It seems like anybody who was as vocal and determined as John Beeson probably had a lot of other people writing about him at that time, too. Did you find lots of other stuff?
Yes, and mostly negative writings about Beeson, especially from people in Oregon. That's why I titled the book Oregon Outcast, because really he was not respected and well-regarded in Oregon. So he went back east to New York first and wrote a book called A Plea for the Indians. And that got some attention and acclaim. He wrote it as an introduction to himself and to what he had witnessed in the West. And the East Coast people ate it up. They respected his authority of actually being a witness, not just being, a philanthropist in general, but he actually knew what he was talking about.
We were talking about John Beeson, Oregon Outcast, as titled in Jan Wright's book. Jan will be talking about John Beeson at a Friends of the Hannon Library event at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University on Thursday evening at 5:30. Place John Beeson in the context of his time. I mean, how unusual was it for someone to take the position he took on behalf of indigenous people? I mean, we're talking about this is the time of the quote-unquote Rogue River Indian Wars.
Exactly. He got here in 1853, right in the middle of a conflict that the Indian Wars started here in Southern Oregon in 1853 and continued until he left in 1856. In fact, he left the same week that the Indians were removed from the Southern Oregon. He was outspoken, and he was pretty much alone. General Wool, who was in charge of the army in the whole Pacific Northwest, spoke out against the volunteers exterminating Indians, and Joel Palmer, who was the Indian agent, also spoke out against the practices that the volunteers were doing. But John Beeson pretty much stood alone in his ability to stand for something and not let them get away when telling lies. And for that, I admire him. I am pretty much neutral about him right now, but I have a deep respect for his ability to not only speak out, but to actually make a lot of sacrifices in his life in order to improve the lives of the Native Americans.
Neutral about him, why? I mean, are there some other things that detract from his advocacy on behalf of Native Americans?
Well, just like everyone alive, we live in a context, in a time period where it's not always, everything he did was not always politically correct. We wouldn't look at it now and say, oh my gosh, that's wonderful. We would say, well, that's a little biased. And so he had some of that, which we all do. And that's forgivable. But my main interest in him was through Wellborn, his son. And because of that, I focused in my writing about the relationship between Wellborn and his father, John. Just like any great advocate, Martin Luther King, anyone who chooses to be single-minded and work for a cause, there are certain sacrifices they have to make, and the family suffers. And that was true in the case of John Beeson. He left his wife, Anne, and his son here in Oregon for many, many years and asked them repeatedly for money to support his cause, which they didn't have. And because Wellborn was the only child, he was left with a 320-acre farm to keep up.
Jan Wright is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an archivist with the Southern Oregon Historical Society and the author of John Beeson, Oregon Outcast. We're learning about John Beeson and his activities on behalf of Native Americans at a time when most people didn't do that. And Jan will be talking to a session at the Hannon Library on Thursday evening at 5:30, brought in by friends of the Hannon Library. Let's talk about John Beeson leaving Oregon. It was not his choice, I gather.
No, and it dawned on me as I was writing the book and just recently, too, about how traumatic that experience was for him. He must have had PTSD as he went back to New York and then couldn't really feel comfortable coming home. His family was asking him to come home, and he just didn't feel safe. His life was threatened by the Democrats at the time, the people who were running for office.
Pro-slavery Democrats.
Pro-slavery, mm-hmm. William Tvalt and S.P. Taylor, a minister of the Methodist Church, and other people who were adamantly opposed to what he was saying because it made them look bad. And he actually ran against these people in 1855 and lost, of course. He only got 10 votes. But he wanted to expose what they were doing and tell the truth about it rather than whitewash it and say it wasn't so bad.
So give a larger context and bio here. What was it about John Beeson and his upbringing that might have indicated the path he chose as an adult?
He was an unusual person, just all around. He was not one to sit by and let things happen. He was born in England, and at the time that I wrote the book, I didn't know, and during John Beeson's lifetime, he didn't know that his great-grandfather was a Quaker born in Pennsylvania. Hmm. And the Quaker philosophy and tendencies really came out in John Beeson without him knowing that there was that relationship. But he joined the Methodist Church when the Methodist Church was kind of liberal and radical. It emphasized, you know, personal revelation and going outside for services and that sort of thing. And then when he was 10 years old, he had to apprentice out to a confectioner, and he left home at 10. And he was one of 10 children, and I imagine the family didn't have very much money, and he hated being a confectioner. He hated it. He said it contributed to gluttony and bad health on people, which he knew about the dangers of sugar long before anyone else
That's
was
true.
Preaching about
That's
it.
True.
And when he came to America, it seems like he really caught that vision of what America's all about in the ideal form. And he really wanted everyone to have equal rights. And when he was in Illinois, he was a rabid abolitionist. He participated in the Underground Railroad. He was three times taken to court under the black slave laws. And he wouldn't take any kind of argument for slavery. He knew it was morally wrong, and he didn't let anyone tell him that the Bible or anyone else that it was okay to have slaves. So he transferred that knowledge and that advocacy that he did for the black people and tried to group them with the Native Americans before the Civil War, and he saw the possibility of making it a national movement, just like it was with Uncle Tom's Cabin. His plea for the Indians was a similar kind of expose on what was going on around here, and he wanted people to know what it was really like, and the causes of the war were very important to him. The exterminators or the colonial people around here that were taking the Indian land were justifying it by saying that the Indians were attacking them and they needed to be driven out. And John Beeson just said, no, the Quakers did it, and Dr. McLaughlin in the Hudson Bay Company mm-hmm. did it. There's no reason why we have to kill people and remove them from this place.
Final word here from Paul on Sterling Creek, who emailed in to say Oregon Outcast is a well-written, well-researched book, a story well told. Thanks for writing it, Jan.
Wow, thanks.
And thanks for the email, Paul. And thank you, Jan Wright, for showing up to talk about Oregon Outcast, about John Beeson, who lived in what is now Talent, and not for very long after he began to express his feelings about equality for, or at least equal fair treatment for Native Americans in the region. Jan's talk is brought in by the Friends of the Hannon Library, so at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University on Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Jan Wright, thanks so much for joining
us
once again on The Exchange.
Appreciate it.
Short break on the Jefferson Exchange, and we'll be back.